This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bond, and Tony with you. Lots to get to over the course of the next 2 hours. And I got to say, JVT, it's been a pretty darn good sports week between the Stanley Cup Final coming to a close. We've got the NBA Finals, which could end tonight. We shall see. WNBA fights, College World Series elimination games, MLB trades, and an NBA franchise purchased for a valuation of $10 billion. So pretty interesting sports week.
Not really looking forward to what the future holds for the Los Angeles Lakers, only because, of course, I am a Los Angeles Clippers fan. And watching the same group that now owns the Los Angeles Dodgers just prance on in and take a majority hold of this Lakers team and will not be able to fill it. Imagine, this is going to sound like a crazy statement, imagine the Lakers actually being a well-run organization.
Whoa.
Like, that's actually going to be something that's pretty pretty crazy. We'll get to the details of it, but I was not happy about the news yesterday. So
yeah, we'll touch more on that in about
held a little bit of a...
It's okay. I
had a little service yesterday with my wife and my two children. Burning candles. Hopefully the downfall of the Los Angeles Lakers franchise is soon to come, but probably not.
For anyone who's just listening on the radio and you don't have the television feed, looked like JVT was wiping away a tear a moment ago.
I mean, can the rich get rich? I see you're going to get me started.
Okay,
can the rich get richer?
Like, we will get into that more in about 15 minutes, but a lot of other stuff we got to kick things off with. So, producer Brian Ortega, if you would, set the table with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the Rundown.
We have an NBA game we got to talk about tonight, JVT. That's why I got to put off this talk a little bit, because the Thunder have potential to close out the Pacers. They're 6-point favorite to do so, even with their road struggles this postseason. Total 222. We'll give you the latest on Tyrese Halliburton's strained calf and potential impact, not only from a game standpoint, but props as well tonight.
Interesting angles for this, where the number is in comparison where it was last time when we are in Indiana. Interesting to note, we'll hear, I think, from Mike Palm a little bit later. He won't join us. We'll play. He was on with Dave and Jensen earlier about what books might need. It is a fascinating game outside of just the, hey, a championship might be awarded to me.
Yes, and meanwhile, we will have Tom Byrne join us, host from Mad Dog Radio, talk through NBA Finals, as well as what will be a 16-game Major League Baseball slate today, a couple makeup game doubleheaders, Pirates-Tigers, Cardinals-White Sox after getting postponed due to the weather yesterday. You won your Boston-Seattle first 3-under yesterday.
I did not.
You didn't?
I believe it was 1-1 after 2.
What was the number? Was it 2.5? No!
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. It was a great game, right? 3-1 for the final.
Oh, I saw 1-1, and I was like, oh, just
nuts,
got there.
Dead nuts under. Didn't have to worry about it. But first three, nope. A run in each of the top and the second of the second inning. So it was 1-1 going into the rest of the contest.
Shoot, I wrote down the wrong number for you.
It's okay.
I was going to say clean sweep, but I don't want to rub it in now. My picks won yesterday.
Okay.
So that
good
was
job.
Good. Hopefully we'll keep some positive momentum.
And the other one got postponed, as we talked about, right?
Because
that's one of the other games we will get today. But it was very sad.
Greg Peterson will also join us, host of Baseball Betting Show. I mean, a lot of things
part
to get
to there.
Part of
me thinks you there. Did that on
purpose. What? I swear to God I did it.
I don't know.
I swear to God I did it.
It's revenge for TSA pre-check conversations. I don't know.
You know I wouldn't do that to you, but TSA PreCheck love, getting a lot of support out there on the socials. So thank you all for chiming in, replying to the video at MoneyMoves_VSiN on Instagram, Newgram. Getting a lot of feedback there, so appreciate you guys. But like I said, Greg Peterson's going to join us as well. Lots of baseball topics to get into. The Yankees streak continues, so that's a good thing for you. The Angels.
Yes.
Three straight now, potential to go four.
You should talk about that. I might have more on that coming up.
Okay. Later. Good deal. So we'll get into all of that. But the most exciting baseball of the night yesterday actually came in Omaha, Nebraska. An absolutely insane bottom of the ninth inning and just a complete and utter meltdown by the Arkansas Razorbacks. For anybody who missed it last night, we got the matchup we wanted in bracket two of the College World Series. It's the rematch of LSU and Arkansas. Hogs are favored. They needed a win to force a winner-take-all game today and a spot in the championship series. Well, the Hogs were in prime position to do that. Bottom of the ninth, they're up 5-3. And it's just a comedy of errors, which started with a pitcher's flub that got a batter on base. The shortstop passes on a chance to turn a double play that would have just ended the whole thing. Instead, throws to third for the force out. Left fielder misjudges and slips with a ball coming right to him. I think it bounced off his shoulder or something like that. And then the play to end it, Jared Jones with a line drive up the middle. Second baseman couldn't reel it in. Game over. LSU wins at 6-5. And it was just like everything that could go wrong did for Arkansas.
I was surprised you don't even call it a failed turn double play because they didn't even try it. So the lack of an attempt at the double play, I don't think got enough play when you're talking about the way that this game is being talked about. That, to me, is like
the most egregious.
The kid running the first isn't even in frame when you look at the alternate angle. That's an easy double play to wrap this thing up. I thought that was – you talk about flubs and, you know, mind F-ups and all these sort of – that, to me, is one of those where you're like, man, you wonder what the kid's thinking when you're talking about going to third there as opposed to trying to end the game and getting the double play, and then chaos ensues after that. I mean, it just goes to show, again, one decision can screw up everything, but none of the rest happens if you just go to second. That to me was amazing watching that happen.
And I know they're college players, right? And so these things happen. We also get to see it from the bird's eye view and everything, but I feel like in that position, there's nothing that getting the base runner out at third does for you. I don't understand why you do that.
Yeah, I that's tough. And, you know, like we talked about yesterday, this was the LSU game, we got one in the pocket, right, situation, where it was just like, okay, we don't really have to – it's not that we have to come out and try our hardest. We talked about with Aaron Moore. We can afford a loss here.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they came out, they were able to take advantage of this, and, like, that was – I was flabbergasted watching that meltdown.
I was texting you and Brian just like, are you guys watching this? I cannot believe my eyes right now. Let's take a listen post-game Arkansas manager Dave Van Horn on that sequence of events that played out in the final frame.
Would you like to have seen Vahiva try to turn the double play on that play? And then also, what was your perspective of Charles's play and left?
Yeah. Well, the way it all turned out, I guess I would have. I haven't talked to him about it. I guess he felt like he moved too far to his right for Cam to turn it, you know. I don't know. Well, you know, he's an average runner. He's not a flyer, but he's not slow either. So I don't know, you know. And then the ball, you know, because I had a straight-on view of it, it was hit hard, obviously, and it was kind of hooking and sinking. But it looked like Charles slipped, like, right at the beginning of taking off for it. And then when he slipped, he probably lost sight of it. And when the ball's hit that hard, you know, he's just trying to find it. And I'd have to watch it again. You know, we're a long ways away. You know, that's what I saw.
Every cut to the dugout when they showed Van Horn or just like the group as a whole, it's like every time there was one of those mistakes, no one could believe it. Just head down.
We're always going to remember the money line result, obviously, is pretty big. The total goes over.
Well, run line was in play for Arkansas, too.
Yep.
The total was 10.5 and 11 now.
Everything, Arkansas, run line, under, and then everything completely flips on its head. LSU, like, no run, no. If you laid it, you're done, and the game goes over the total. That's just one of those. I mean, like you said, that's college sports.
If you had the under 10.5, like, that's the
one. You talked to Aaron yesterday about that, right?
Sick.
There were a lot of people. Yeah. I think that was a very popular play for the most part yesterday.
Now LSU, so they do advance to the College World Series. They're going to play Coastal Carolina, who, by the way, they secured their spot yesterday with just a blowout win against Louisville, 11-3 the final there. LSU from even money yesterday to win it all, now out to -190 favorites to win the College World Series. So, yeah, your ticket is looking pretty good on the Tigers. They're -175 in game one of the best of three set to begin on Saturday. Coastal +155 in the series, +135 in game one. Are you scared at all knowing this Coastal team has not lost a game since April 22nd? They're on a sick run, 26 straight wins.
It's 20, what happened is it again?
26.
26 straight in a game of baseball, which is absolutely stupid. So I would expect that dries up at some point. But no, you're in a good position here, so put a little on the other side and let's just sit back and watch this series come in.
It is the longest win streak entering the championship round in college baseball history. The previous record was held by the 1948 USC Trojans, who did go on to win it. The last four teams that had a win streak of, I think it was 15 games or more, have all gone on to win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting too. I mean, some of the spots, I'm going to be curious to see where the market moves here, because some of the spots opened LSU like DraftKings, for example, went 166, went up to -175, came right back down. So maybe there's a little bit of a ceiling at about +135 or so potentially for the shots, if you will. But initial market moves in some spots, if you open at $1.60, went in the direction of the dog. So I'll be very curious to see where the market ends up by the time we get to our first game coming up here in 2 days.
LSU's just been so good. They've been atop the odds board for a long time for a reason. You know, when you get to Omaha, they're going to have all the support in the world. We saw it at Rocco's. We didn't even talk about this. Paul Skeens going into Rocco's and
missed it by a day, right?
Missed it by a day.
Kind of, I'm kind of glad we did, to be honest with you.
It would have been too chaotic.
That would have been insane. You saw how crazy it was when we were just right before we went to the game on Friday.
Yeah, but we're in a fenced off area essentially, so it wouldn't really impact us that much.
I mean, too bad for Paul and Mitch. They could have gotten him on. I'm sure they only wanted him on, and nobody else that was part of that traveling party for Paul's game
had no interest in the other woman who happens to be a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model and gymnast.
Paul, I don't know. Paul sent out a kind of a creepy tweet.
Like, oh, no. I didn't see that, Paul. Settle down. It just looked like a blast out there, though, and obviously we'll keep tabs on it again.
They're not going to get the record, right?
It doesn't look like it. They were at like 20,000 yesterday. But still, like, outpacing the field crazy. Again, that best of three series set to begin on Saturday. Coastal was the only team in the tournament that did not lose a game throughout. But LSU trying to close the door and win their second title in, what is it, 4 years, mm-hmm. I think, right?
23,651, by the way, for LSU at the last update for the Collins World Series.
Yeah. Jay Johnson done a great job with that crew. Okay, we're going to take our first time out of the break. I didn't even mention justice for Karen Reed, which we will have to get to at some point today because I'm very invested. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but into it in a big way. Mm-hmm. When we come back, however, we will get into the Buss family officially selling the Lakers. I will let you vent and get all of the steam out of your ears that you need to get done. And, of course, preview Game 6 of the NBA Finals coming up tonight. The latest on Tyrese Halliburton dealing with a calf strain coming into a pivotal, oh, my God, Game 6, win or go home. We'll be right back.
Someone say it's pivotal.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. The big news in the last 24 hours, the Buss family selling the Los Angeles Lakers to Mark Walter for a valuation of $10 billion, billion with a B, the highest ever for an American sports professional franchise. Despite their 46-year run as the majority owner, Buss family will keep a minority share, just over 15%. Reportedly, Jeannie Buss is expected to continue running the team as its governor for, quote, at least a number of years. You, as a Clippers fan, already mentioned you didn't feel great about this.
It's just annoying because here's the thing, and this was brought up by many people. What is good for the Los Angeles Lakers? So there's like the short term and the long term. The long term is a lot of people, and this was pointed out by like Brian Windhorst, Tim Bontemps, and some other people that were reporting on this. A lot of people assume that it's just more of, hey, now we get to spend money. Well, the aprons are still in place for the CBA, so you can't just go pull the Dodgers, right, and just go, here we go.
Which he is coincidentally the owner
of. Yes, correct.
So let's throw that in there.
Yes, so you can't, like, go, come on down, Giannis, come on down, Kate. You can't just stockpile assets like crazy. There's still things in place to keep you from doing that. Obviously, the league has implemented that for more competitive balance. But what it means is you can invest more in terms of just everything around the team, right? Scouting department, training department, just all sort of different stuff that would make you even more attractive or just help your team out, get a lot better in also all these different categories. So in the big picture, even though it doesn't sound like that much, if you're just throwing money at the most important positions, getting the best of the best, you're probably going to be in a position that's going to help you out in the big picture. So it's really good for them. In the short term, like, you're not running to make any bets out of this. This free agency period doesn't change. They're still there in terms of the cap. They still have all the roster needs that they have. But, like, the thing that I thought of immediately was, man, Luka Doncic got traded at the right time. Because now, for you would assume the rest of his career, if he stays as a Los Angeles Laker, he's going to have an ownership group that is going to invest very much in that team's success. Not that the Busses weren't, but for owners of an NBA franchise, they very much weren't like stinking rich in comparison with some of these others. And now it's going to be a lot different. And they'll be able to operate at a similar level as Los Angeles Clippers and Steve Ballmer, who's very much investing, obviously, a ton of money in the Los Angeles Clippers to make them successful.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, though, that the Dodgers, for example, which he owns and have had all the success, and they bring in Shohei and they bring in Mookie Betts and all these guys, that's an uncapped sport where in the NBA you have different restraints. So having these deep pockets is significant, just not in terms of bringing in talent and what you can pay guys, because that's not going to matter there. Luka, speaking of which, did post a statement on Twitter this morning saying, "The Lakers are an amazing organization. I'm looking forward to meeting Mark and excited about the future. I'm also grateful to Jeannie and the Buss family for welcoming me to LA, and I'm happy that Jeannie will continue to be involved. I look forward to working with both of them to win championships." Plural. Got the little S on the end. The Jeannie element of it, what is your thought on that? Because I kind of feel like, believe it when I see it, knowing what happened with Mark Cuban in the past, or what is the layer of this? How important is that to the deal?
I think it's more about Rob Pelinka. I don't think I'm saying anything crazy here. I don't think Rob Pelinka is actually a very good general manager.
No.
He has stepped in it a thousand times, right? And so when you look at when you're talking about another ownership group coming in, truly evaluating some of these moves, and not having a personal relationship with a guy like Pelinka, that I think is the most interesting thing. Yes, he just signed an extension, so it's not going to come up, I think, for a little bit. But that, to me, is the most interesting aspect is, 5 years down the road, who is really running this team from an executive standpoint when it comes to general manager with basketball operations and getting this roster together. Yeah. That, to me, I think is going to be interesting, because if you truly evaluate what Pelinka has done, he really hasn't done that great of a job. He's just stumbled ass backwards into many great things, including fleecing his friend for Luka Doncic for absolutely nothing. So that, I think, is one of the more actual basketball impact moves. What is that going to mean? And again, though, as we're talking about it, years down the road, not this year.
It is kind of crazy to think about. I mean, our lifetimes, obviously, it's always been under the same ownership. There's such a famous family, like I mentioned, still involved as a minority stake. But Mark Walter, the new owner of the majority stake in the franchise of the Los Angeles Lakers, which, again, that's a name, too, that I don't know if a lot of people really know. He is an owner that it's not like he's Jerry Jones or Matt Ishbia, who just took over the Suns a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
He's not somebody that wants to be in the spotlight, in the forefront. And I think that, obviously, it's worked for the Dodgers, and maybe that could be another feather in the cap for the Los Angeles Lakers as well.
And to your point about Ishbia, look, Ishbia is just not a great owner. He seems like a petulant child trying to throw money at problems. Yeah. And it's a different way than what Ballmer has done it, right? Ballmer is investing in different aspects of the Clippers. Say what you want about the franchise and the failures in the postseason. It is a franchise that is being invested in the right way, the new arena, all those sort of things. An owner like Ishbia has kind of just been trying to buy his way to a victory by acquiring all the big names and the assets and things like that. And in terms of putting his team in position in the future, well, that be damned. We just want all the big names. Obviously, that hasn't worked out. So to your point about ownership, this isn't like a new group that's come in and is like, hey, I want new things and I want great things and I want it now. They know how this thing works.
Yep. Okay, reminder everybody, Edge Boost, the first ever bank account built for bettors, ensuring all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums. You get cash back rewards, 100% approval for any and all betting deposits. And when you sign up today using the website edgeboost.bet and our promo code MONEY, deposit $25, Edge Boost will match that deposit. Again, edgeboost.bet is where you need to go. Money, the code to type in. And we've got game 6 tonight in the NBA Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder, a 6.5 or 6-point favorite, depending on where you look right now. A lot of those 6.5s seem to be going away, though. Total 222. Tyrese Haliburton, the big question in this one, dealing with a strained calf, limited him clearly in game 5. How do you feel about him today?
Same thing we felt for the last few days. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to give it a go. But how effective will he be is going to be the real question. Where this number goes, I think, is going to be pretty fascinating if Tyrese Haliburton plays. We clearly know he's not 100% healthy. So what is a hampered Tyrese Haliburton worth to the line? What do you think this number tells you that this what the market thinks, right, about Tyrese Haliburton? We're kind of stuck in limbo at this point right now. I would assume that if he plays, you're not going much far. I think this is probably where we end up closing. I can't imagine a hampered Tyrese Haliburton being worth a point or point and a half to a spread right now that it's stuck right here. So maybe it gets to 7 if he doesn't play and you get some buyback there, maybe 7.5. But I can't imagine we move much farther from where we're at here, given the fact that even if we don't know a status story, we don't know how fully healthy he is.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So he was in game 5, by the way, scoreless from the floor, 4 points in the game, just one shot attempt even in the second half. After the game, he did come out and say, if I can walk, I can play. But it feels kind of like a lose-lose if you're Tyrese Haliburton, in that, if you play hurt and you hurt your team and it's not going great, you're going to get criticized. if he doesn't play or doesn't play much, then he's not a competitor.
Of course.
And then you're going to get criticized again. So it's like
the stupidest thing in the world.
So now it's just about what's the level of effectiveness tonight. But he's going to get criticized coming out of this no matter what, unless he's unbelievable.
The annoying part of we've discussed this before, but the coverage around this overall has been, you know, you've heard there was criticism of Darius Garland for not. Remember, he had the toe issue, and he was wearing, like, a special brace that was keeping his toe in place when he eventually came back. He got killed for not playing. Then he got killed for not being effective, and now he has surgery. Yeah. And, like, to your point here, like, there's no win here. So we'll see what happens with Tyrese, but it's a tough spot to be in. But he's very clearly injured. I think that's very
– I know we'll talk about this more a little bit later, but the prop numbers, like, is it a buy low if you expect him to do – like, have a normal complement of minutes or at least close to that? Because
I think that depends on how he looks, right?
Sure. 13.5 points is the number. Game one, it was 19.5. So it's a 6-point adjustment.
I mean, you can make the argument there's both ways. Like we talked about, if he's not as explosive, if he can't get off the dribble, and by the way, you're probably playing him off ball a little bit more just because you don't want him to have to deal with like a press and having to get the ball up and beat defenders, right? So he's probably playing off ball. You're allowing Nembhard and others to bring the ball up so he doesn't have to work that hard. So maybe there's more 3-point shooting. Like you could see a scenario where he's just taking perimeter shots, and those shots start going down, and maybe that gets you over a low number. You know what I'm saying? Also, though, he could still be ineffective because he's just getting destroyed on defense, and he really isn't that great. Again, I think it's more of those – look, you have spots that have in-game player props. This is one where you're observing, and you have to make your observations based on how he's playing. If he is lacking explosiveness, if he's relying on three-point shooting, if he's not doing anything with the ball, if he's just kicking out, right, that's something where you're playing your player props accordingly. I think it's really hard. Sometimes I know we're supposed to be like, this is what we like. This is the edge. In a situation like this where the best player with the highest usage is a complete and utter question mark, it is hard to, I think, point to this game and go, I feel like there's an edge here and you should play it. I think you wait to see what the game starts.
Here are the numbers, at least pre-flop. Again, 13.5, the points prop. It is minus 120 to the under. His three-point prop, which is usually set at 2.5, is 1.5. Minus 166 to the over, however. His assist prop down to 6.5. Rebounds, 4.5. I haven't bet this game. If I did or if I do, I probably need to do it now and get in on OKC while I can, if this grows a little bit. But I feel like if Oklahoma City is the better team, and I believe they are, and they have shown that much more the last couple of games too, the way that their full complement offensive and defensive efficiency has come together, then why wouldn't I like them even more with a hampered Tyrese Haliburton?
Sure. So. I would agree with that general statement. And the other part too, I think we mentioned this the other day. I know a lot of people, and I am a big stan. He is number four, on my NBA MVP ladder. A full game of TJ McConnell running point is going to look much different than TJ McConnell coming in the third quarter against the backups. And I would be very hesitant to just like jump on Indiana if he's going to get a big glut of
points. Okay, fair. We will hear later on in hour two from Mike Palm on who, which is an interesting wrinkle. But when we come back, diving into today's MLB slate with our own Greg Peterson. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you haven't checked out all of the write-ups at VSiN.com, now is the time. We have NBA Game 6, Best Bets, and Player Props live on the site. UFC Fight Night coming up, Hill vs. Roundtree preview. Steve Mackinnon's got power ratings and betting trends. Zach Cohen with tennis. JVT got MLB picks and props, as does our good friend Greg Peterson, who joins us here on Money Moves. VSiN.com/subscribe, though, for access to all of it. Greg Peterson on the Progressive Guest Line, obviously VSiN analyst, host of the Baseball Betting Show. You can follow him on X at GUnit_81. We're going to break down what is a big MLB slate today, Greg. But before we get into it, you know this better than anyone. The man to my left, great guy, but renowned Texas Roadhouse hater after his experience on Mother's Day last month. I need you to state your case as to why Texas Roadhouse is great and to get JVT back on the wagon.
For one, they hand cut the steaks in person with an actual butcher every single day within the restaurant. I know that there's a lot of people saying, well, oh, it's only good for the rolls. Well, that's what sets it apart. That's the reason why you go to some of these places. Red Lobster has their amazing biscuits. Texas Roadhouse, you get that amazing sweet butter. You get the rolls in there. And then you know what? You're set up for success. I typically go with the fried pickles personally, along with a nice sirloin steak. I have been to many, many Texas Roadhouses. Have never had a bad experience at any one of them.
Mm. Great argument.
I mean, it's not okay. Again, our audience knows this dynamic. You're terrible at setting these up. The whole point of why this came up again is one of our wonderful behind the scenes folks here, Rob Moreno. I apologize, I don't know Rob's official title. Also shared with me yesterday that his experience at Texas Roadhouse was awful. And so
maybe
it's not about Greg making the pitch. I was just pointing out that yet another person here at the network had a terrible experience. By the way, congrats on the low bar. Olive Garden, Red Lobster, Texas Roadhouse, and Outback Steakhouse all have great bread. Congratulations. It's a very low bar. But we don't want to waste people's time with this. We know this.
Real quickly, though, before we move on, because we still got a little bit of time here. What was the rationale between for Rob not liking it? Was it service related?
No, it was food related. Again. By the way, Carrabba's. Throw Carrabba's in there too. Very good bread. Very good bread.
Very good bread. But I liked the argument, and I agree with you on all counts.
Oh, macaroni grill. We can go down this list. Continue. Baseball.
They do have good bread, but it's not the same. It's not like people are like, oh my God, I want to go to Macaroni Grill for the bread. It's not the same. Okay, that said, we got a lot of baseball to get to today.
It's an honor to have good bread.
16-game slate with a couple doubleheaders, some games getting replayed after a postponement yesterday. I was surprised going through your article, though, today. Maybe I shouldn't be that surprised. The Nationals have been on just a brutal losing streak lately, including three straight to the Rockies. But with it being the Rockies again today, you think this is the bounce back. Today is the day for Washington. Why?
I do think so, because Trevor Williams is much like Yermán Márquez was earlier in the series. He's a pitcher that is doing for some positivity. You take a look at the ERA of a 5.71, it's relatively grody. Is he a little bit more of a pitcher contact guy? Yes, but he's not hurting himself. He's giving up fewer than 2.5 walks per 9 innings. He's only giving up 1 home run per 9 innings. And with this Colorado Rockies team, even though they've gotten hot recently, 10 plus runs in 2 games thus far this week, they are still dead last, even with those performances in terms of runs per game on the road, on base percentage on the road as well. So I do think that with the Washington Nationals, who they've been cold at the plate. Yesterday, you had the rain delay, and they only got one run up on the board. That was a relatively rough performance. That they do get to guy in Chase Dolander, who's been posting up north of a 6 ERA, giving up 2.3 home runs per 9 innings. Now, if you take a look at the road splits for him as well, he has been posting up a sub-450 ERA. That home runs per 9 rate does go down to below 1.5 on the road. So that's why, in conjecture with taking a shot on the Washington Nationals, I do like the total under. I thought that the opener of 9.5 was just way too high here. I think both of these pitchers doing for positivity in their own element. I like the under, and I do like the Nationals on the run line.
Greg, I know you got some other plays, but just out of morbid curiosity, a lot of us obviously talking about the Yankees and this cold streak that they've been on. They get a lefty to oppose here in Tyler Anderson today. What were your general thoughts on what the Bronx Bombers have in store for the Angels today? Can they get out of this slump?
Well, they finally got their first run on the board in 30 innings. My goodness. And it just feels like the Yankees have one of these stretches every year where it's just like they forget how to play baseball for a week or two. I do think that this is a little bit of a bounce back for them. Now, I did not want a shot on the over. Right now, we're seeing this going up to a 10. And for the New York Yankees, I need to see it to believe it at this point, because they have scored 2 more runs than the 3 of us in this series. And that's not great, to say the least, when you're going up against a Professor Kyle Hendricks and Jack Conwitz as starting pitchers. But for Tyler Anderson, he has been a lucky pitcher for years. Like, he has had a fielding independent more than a point higher than his ERA. Even go back to that grand year that he had with the LA Dodgers. He just has been a guy that has pitched above his skis. And now I do think that things are regressing quite a bit for him. He's a little bit more of a try to get a double play ball sort of ground ball pitcher. And I do think that for the New York Yankees, a team that puts the ball in the air, a place with a short porch, that this is going to be a good bounce back spot for them. Right now we're seeing that Yankees run line shooting up to about a minus 148. I do think that this is getting a little bit too rich for my blood, but I do think that for the Yankees, this is a little bit more of a bounce back. But with Carlos Rodon on the mound here at a 10, I would be looking at that under.
Yeah, the under was what I was leaning there too, but Tyler Anderson giving up 14 earned runs over his last 3 starts, maybe a good opportunity for New York to get out of their rut here. We'll stick with the New York theme. The Mets in action today against the Braves, in danger of getting swept by Atlanta. Spencer Strider out there, 1-5 this year. Their bullpen has been struggling. Clay Holmes on the hill for the Mets, who's given up 2 runs or fewer 10 of his last 13 starts. How do you evaluate this one?
I do like the Mets here on the money line. I do think that they avoid the sweep, especially getting anything above a plus 110 for Strider. Really nice start last time out against Colorado Rockies. 13 strikeouts. He pitched shutout baseball. That said, the Atlanta Braves are 1-5 in his six starts this far this season. With the Atlanta Braves, have they been much better with their offense ever since Ronald Acuña Jr. has been back? Absolutely. Guy is giving you north of 450 on base, hitting a home run once every less than three games. So, I mean, he has been on a torrid pace. But for the Mets, what really sets them apart in this game is their bullpen. This team is a top five team in terms of bullpen ERA. Edwin Diaz, if he could get to him, he's starting to look like the Edwin Diaz of old. And for the Atlanta Braves, their bullpen struggles have been very pronounced recently. They had their bullpen struggles against Colorado Rockies in the back half of that series. We remember the six-run blown lead 2 weeks ago against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And with Desmond Hernandez on the injured list, that has hurt them quite a bit. Not completely feeling Spencer Strider, like the way that Clay Holmes has been inducing soft contact. So I took a shot on the over and the Mets on the money line.
All right, speaking of the D-backs, Toronto Blue Jays will play host to them. D-backs have been playing 500 baseball. Blue Jays find themselves in a wild card race. How do we handle this for two pitchers whose underlying metrics are pretty solid?
Absolutely, and I do think that there's a little bit more positivity here with Kevin Gausman, because with Gausman, he's doing a good job of making sure that he's not really hurting himself. Less than 2.4 walks per nine innings, only about 1 to 1.1 home runs per nine. Now, he does face off against an Arizona Diamondbacks team that is one of the best hitting teams in all of baseball. You've got a pair of guys with 20-plus home runs and Eugenio Suarez, along with Corbin Carroll, but also with the Arizona Diamondbacks, that bullpen is rough. 27th in the big leagues in terms of ERA. They have really been lost ever since the AJ Puck injury. They've been looking to mix and match with guys like Shelby Miller and company in the bullpen. Jalen Beeks has given you a few okay innings, but we even saw in the game on Tuesday, had a lead going into the ninth inning, could not hold it. And for the Blue Jays, it finally feels like some of these guys are busting out in terms of being able to give you power. Flagaro Jr., Bo Bichette, you just expected a little bit more out of these guys. They've been getting on base all season long, not necessarily supplying as much of that power. We're starting to see that a bit more, and I think that that continues here. I did take a shot on the 8.5 over, and personally, I went run line with the Blue Jays. I think Kevin Gausman gives a really nice performance. I do think that they get to Nelson and this bullpen.
Another run line play I know you're interested in today, the San Francisco Giants taking on the Guardians. Giants have dropped four straight, just lost another series here with the Guardians already losing two in a row here. How do you break this one down? Logan Webb has been awesome.
And Logan Webb has been even more awesome at home. You take a look at his entire career since 2019, so many years of data here. His ERA falls by 1.4 points when he's at home. He gives up less than 0.44 home runs per nine innings when he's in San Francisco. Obviously, a little bit of a pitcher-friendly ballpark, but I mean, this guy always excels there. Going against guy Gavin Williams, that sure, being in San Francisco helps him out. What being in San Francisco doesn't help with is command, though. 5.1 walks per nine innings, backed by a Guardians bullpen that last year was number one in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. This year, they're right around about league average. Like, Emmanuel Clase A has not been what he was last season. Hunter Gaddis has been great. Cade Smith is able to give you a lot of strikeouts, but I mean, outside of those two guys, it's been very wishy-washy, and the bottom of the Cleveland Guardians lineup is nothing to write home about. They've been mixing and matching with a lot of guys hitting below a 225, and the Rafael Devers trade really elevates the San Francisco Giants team that it felt like they had a little bit of everything aside from the lineup, especially considering when you've got Logan Webb on the mound, you also have the number one team in terms of bullpen ERA. I think that the Giants have all the goods here to be able to not just get the job done today, but if you're looking at the futures market, them right around plus $7, plus $8 to win the West, I don't think that that's a bad sprinkle.
Thanks so much, Greg. Appreciate the insight and keep fighting the good fight. Don't let JVT's negativity bring you down.
Oh, don't worry. I will be fighting this good fight until the day that I die. I will always battle the honor of Texas Roadhouse. Thank you.
Love it. I'm here for it. I just think you just like to hate things. You just like to be the guy that doesn't like stuff.
No, it's not true at all. I like a lot of things. I like Apple. I like Applebee's.
I don't know. You don't like cream cheese. You don't like frosting on Pop-Tarts. Sounds like you got a lot of stuff that you need to deal with internally. On that note, we're going to take a quick timeout. Is that something you might be interested in? Coming up after this to round out the hour.
A good meal at Texas Roadhouse.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're a sports bettor and you haven't checked out the races, come join First Bet. First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. And when you sign up at firstbet.com, that's the number one, stbet.com, and use our promo code here at VSiN, VSiN200, that'll help you claim a 20% rebate your first 60 days, up to $200. Head over to firstbet.com today. Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Time for a little segment that our producer Brian Ortega puts together where he basically plays a salesman trying to pitch us bets and see if it's something we might be interested in. Roll it.
What if I told you I have a bet nobody's thought of yet? Is that something you'd be interested in?
That voice gets me every time. Okay, let's get into it, starting with the NBA Finals. Game 6 on deck today. Pacers on the brink of elimination, and their star player, Tyrese Haliburton, dealing with a calf strain injury. And Brian said, with Tyrese Haliburton questionable today, he expects Pascal Siakam to play a huge role tonight and go over his point total of 21.5 points. It's an even money price, ladies and gentlemen. Is that something you might be interested in?
Was Brian Ortega listening yesterday when I joined a numbers game from the Circa parking garage when I said that really the only way I would bet this game is Pascal Siakam over points and rebounds?
Whoa.
So I would agree with this sentiment. Look, Siakam's actually done really well throughout this entire series. It was game 2. He only had 15 points. But outside of that, he has done such a great job, and the Pacers have done a great job of getting him on matchups that really work for him. Every time there's a smaller opponent on him, he is taking advantage. He's hitting at a high rate. And generally, he's going to find that smaller mismatch most of the time because there are guys that are just small on the Thunder's Thunder roster, and they haven't had an answer for him. Look at the last three games of this series. 21 points on 57% shooting, 20 points with 8 rebounds on 6 of 15 shooting, and then, of course, the monster 28 on 9 of 15. This has been a matchup that has worked for him. He scored over 20 in each of the last three, and I think that mismatch remains. And especially if Haliburton's hurt, that volume is just going to go up, and I think there's going to be more opportunity. So I would agree.
And while I know like you and I are both of the belief that this thing ends tonight, that Oklahoma City finishes the job, you did bring up a really astute point earlier this week about Pascal Siakam in the NBA Finals MVP market. Sure. That if you were to like Indiana, the way that you should bet that instead of betting the series price on Indiana is taking the 12-1, which is apparently getting played because I see 11-1 this morning on Siakam to win MVP.
Yeah, that's I think that is pretty much how it's going to go. Like, I don't think there's any universe. Haliburton's done nothing throughout the series. If they somehow pull this off, he needs to be a little bit better. Siakam's done way too much to be surpassed by him.
Okay. Sticking with hoops, but going to the W, Caitlin Clark on a tear her first two games coming back from injury. Shirley has a little added fire, too, after all of the antics that took place against the Connecticut Sun earlier this week. Clark's alt number to score 25-plus points, Brian says, in tonight's Commissioner's Cup Championship against the Valkyries. He likes it. Is that something you might be interested in? Again, plus 210.
I mean, it's a big number. I lean toward no. Valkyrie are a middle-of-the-pack defensive team. They're giving up just about less than a point per possession. They're seventh in the WNBA in defensive rating. They do give up quite a few threes, actually the fourth most amount of three-point attempts. But I think it's by game plan, by design. They're not giving up too much in terms of three-point shooting percentage-wise. Floating around like 34%, which is up there, but there's like kind of a gap between them and the worst teams in terms of opponent three-point shooting. I just think Caitlin Clark's stuff is generally kind of inflated.
Yeah.
And would lead toward no. She has the capability of doing it, and if they're going to give up those shots, then maybe. And maybe there's something to a letdown after a big, intense, physical matchup.
We didn't even talk about that yesterday. Yeah. What did you think of how that all went down?
I mean, the whole point here is that WNBA officiating is an absolute nightmare. Like, you can't allow that to happen. You've got to issue technicals. It was clearly brewing the entire time. You can't allow, and this isn't like a pro, you got to protect the face of the league, Caitlin Clark thing. You can't allow a player get body checked and then deal out dueling technicals in a situation like that. It's ridiculous. I just thought the officiating should have been the story so much, but whatever. It's fine.
And then her teammate Sophie Cunningham gets ejected at the end of the game for the play that she had.
It's a hard foul.
I liked that their head coach Stephanie White, though, came out and said, everything in this league is leveling up, getting better, except for the officials. And I feel like that's a very accurate representation.
That'd be better, man. Like, that's on you. You've got to keep things in check. They did not do that.
Caitlin Clark, 20 points in that game against the Connecticut Sun, against the Liberty, her first game back, handing New York their first loss, had 32.
What about you?
What about me?
Is this something you might be interested in?
I mean, she could go off at any moment. So plus 210, I'm not putting it in the account today. But yeah, it's something I could be interested in, honestly. She hits a few more threes. She gets it going. If somebody makes her mad, like any of those things, that is, she could be on at any moment.
She is somewhat Luka-esque in that regard.
Yes.
Right? Like, if Luka Doncic finds a villain, even if it's a small child with an ice cream cone on the sideline, like, watch out. Okay. It's over.
We talked earlier about Coastal Carolina and their win streak in the College World Series. They haven't lost a single game in the NCAA tournament. They have 26 straight wins under their belt coming into what is the championship series against LSU. And Brian likes Coastal in game one specifically as a dog, plus 135. Is that something you might be interested in?
I mean, I'd acquiesce to you. You've been a little more into this than I have. I would say no. I think LSU is on a run of destiny, and they will absolutely dismantle the Shants and sweep them.
Is any part of that biased?
Yes.
By your ticket?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. So fully?
Yes.
Their pitching's awesome. But yeah, LSU, SEC, it's just a different level that they've played in. But as much as you want to even criticize Coastal's route to get here in the regular season, they did actually schedule out of conference pretty difficult. And the way that they've come through the tournament, yeah, they get Louisville to cement their spot here, but it's not like any team that you're playing at this level is easy to go through. So, right. I mean, you can say why not, but I told you from the beginning, too, I liked LSU. We were backing LSU the whole time we were out there in Omaha.
Well, and as we kind of talked about, too, with Aaron yesterday, where I think they were in position to set their pitching up where they had a game to give, right, against Arkansas. So they weren't really going to go all hands on deck. Now, after winning and advancing and with some days off, like, you can come out of the gate right now and be firing in the first game. So we'd still lean toward our guys.
That said, last time Coastal got to this spot, they won it all. Speaking of LSU baseball, though, Paul Skeens on the hill today in the second game of doubleheader for the Pirates. And Brian says Skeens to have over 6.5 strikeouts is a bet he loves in game two. Minus 120. Does he get the K's he needs?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say very strong no. That he does not get this here today. I'm going to say maybe absolutely not.
Whoa.
Because I think this game's going to get postponed.
Oh, no.
It looks like that's going to be the case.
And weather again.
If you look at the weather, there's like, as I think Roth is calling it, like a second line of storms that are coming. And it looks like, because this is the second game, if I remember correctly, of the doubleheader, that it's going to be in danger of being rained out. So I'll say no. Is that a cop-out?
I think that's a total cop-out. When it's rescheduled, no. If this game were to be played, would you like him against that lineup?
I would generally say no. I mean, again, it's kind of similar to me, to the whole Caitlin Clark thing that we just discussed, in that I would tend to lean toward no's with players like this, not because I don't like them or don't think they're capable, but just because you're generally paying a little bit more than you really should. Tigers, too, they are at the bottom of the list, like bottom 10 in terms of strikeout rate. So there's potentially a case that they could go out there, start whiffing, and he gets over it. But I think these numbers are usually pretty high for a guy like Skeen. So I would lean toward no.
Did go over in, what is that, five of his last six?
Yes.
Yeah, five of his last six games.
For a while, if you remember Skeen's, I think we talked about this at the beginning of the year, his strikeout numbers were down. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about chase rate, whiff rate, and just the overall strikeout rate. But he has started to turn it back in the direction that he was last year. And like you're talking about, has come along really strong for a stretch where he was striking out at least seven in like five straight.
Still so crazy to think, even with a 1.78 ERA, that he is 4-6 as a starter this year because of the team that he has behind him. Last one here. We talked about the news of Mark Walter becoming the new majority owner of the Los Angeles Lakers. And you addressed this earlier, but Brian still wants to ask the question, could a blockbuster trade of Giannis Antetokounmpo to the Lakers under this new ownership be something you're interested in?
So I tweeted out yesterday, this is perfectly in line. I'm surprised we didn't bring this back. There was a trade that was out there. It was a 14 deal that involved the Lakers, the Warriors, everything. Now, Giannis actually ended up on the Warriors here, but the whole point being that, as I retweeted, holy dog bleep, there's nothing that these teams have to offer that would generally get Giannis Antetokounmpo. Lakers don't have a package that is on par with what the Bucks could get from other teams that are interested for him. So, no, I will say that Giannis Antetokounmpo, via a trade, will not be part of the Los Angeles Lakers roster.
Does he leave in general?
Is he traded at all at some point? I'd lean toward no, like a small favorite, no, that he sticks around. Well, he seems to be an oddly, loyal?
For?
Yes, thank you. Loyal
I feel like that's what I've heard about him a lot too, but then we can think that about players all we want, but it's still a business, and I feel like a guy's going to do what he's got to do. Like, yeah. Are you really loyal to a place like Milwaukee? If there's other options that are better. No. I don't mean it like that.
We're live in three different, we have three different outputs out there in Milwaukee. Thank
you. Okay. That was one of those moments where it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I feel like my tone on that one didn't hit right. Apologies.
I love Milwaukee.
Everyone in Milwaukee. As do I. Oh, God. We got to go. We'll be right back. MLB Talk. More of that coming up after this.